Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcasts or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. You can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Russia's Sputnik Radio, and Radio Havana Cuba. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Scientists are warning of more extreme weather events like wildfires and flooding on the horizon. As Australia burns, there has been a large increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, compounding the problem. The European Union announced plans to dedicate a quarter of its total budget to tackling climate change. In the next decade, €1 trillion will be invested to reach carbon neutrality in the next 30 years. The U.S. justification for the targeted assassination of Iranian General Soleimani has changed from imminent attacks on Americans, later saying that the embassies would be the target. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Scientists are warning that more extreme weather events like wildfires and flooding are on the horizon after the warmest decade ever recorded. Now, as Australia continues to burn, experts have calculated the effect that the massive bushfires will have on the global climate.
A thick haze blankets New South Wales as exhausted crews continue to battle the wildfires there. The vast cloud of smoke already extends across the Pacific past South America, but an invisible product of the flames could have a bigger long-term impact on global warming. The blazes are releasing vast amounts of CO2. Authorities at the UN say the problem is twofold.
Fires emit carbon dioxide, and obviously they burn up those very forests which are so vital for acting as carbon sinks and absorbing carbon dioxide.
The Australian government estimates the country currently emits around 560 million tons of carbon dioxide annually. Now, experts say that in the last few months alone, the out-of-control fires have pumped an additional 400 million tons of CO2 into the atmosphere. In the past, scientists have generally viewed wildfires as carbon neutral and believed fresh plant growth eventually absorbed the CO2 emitted by burning forests. But changes in precipitation patterns and drought are affecting how quickly some woodlands regenerate. And many researchers are worried that, in a vicious circle, wildfires like those in Australia could make climate change happen even faster.
Tonight, the European Union is announcing plans to dedicate a quarter of its total budget to one thing, tackling climate change. The Europe Investment Plan will direct €1 trillion over the next decade into climate protection. The goal here is to reach carbon neutrality all across Europe within the next 30 years.
This is what the United States moon landing looked like. When it comes to climate protection, the European Commission is not shying away from drawing comparisons to that earth-shattering event.
We do not have all the answers yet. Today is the start of a journey. But this is Europe's man on the moon moment.
A Green Deal for the European Union is Ursula von der Leyen's first major policy proposal since she took office at the end of 2019. Her vision commits the EU to achieving carbon neutrality by 2050. Until then, emissions of greenhouse gases would have to be reduced, stored, or compensated. The EU Commission says it wants to mobilize €1 trillion from various sources over the next decade to make buildings more energy efficient and industry more environmentally friendly as regions all over Europe transition away from coal. Von der Leyen urges the EU to move quickly and take the lead in growing a green economy.
All right, let's take this story now to our correspondent, Max Zander. He is in Strasbourg, France tonight. Good evening to you, Max. So what will this Green Deal money, what will it be spent on exactly? I mean, what are the priorities here?
So, Brett, the Green Deal is designed to slash carbon emissions, and the Just Transition Mechanism, which has been, which is being talked about here in Strasbourg at the moment, is supposed to help countries transfer from a not so environmentally friendly economy to a more greener economy, and at the same time limit emissions. So, just to give you an example, if you're a coal miner in Germany or in Poland, for example, then you could receive training and reskilling funded by the Just Transition Mechanism. By the Green Deal to work in a more environmentally friendly field and not having to lose your job once your country stops working in coal. And at the same time, also, as we heard in the report, buildings will be invested in to be more become more energy efficient, and there will be some investments in electric mobility.
And Max, you know, the saying goes, the budget giveth, the budget taketh. Does this mean that other priorities in the European Union budget will suffer to make these funds available?
Not necessarily. We heard a large number, 1 trillion euros, that's 12 zeros to be exact, but only 7.5 billion euros will come from the EU budget. That's the Just Transition Fund. And this money will be pulled from the EU budget, and it come from the MFF. I have to say that's the long-term EU budget. And where exactly this will come from is not clear at the moment. It could come from a social fund, could come from regional funds. But the majority of the 1 trillion is going to come from private investments, which the Commission hopes to be able to leverage. And these will be backed by the European Investment Bank.
And we're talking about this as if it's a done deal, but there may be opponents. Who's likely to oppose this deal?
Well, one thing politicians, lawmakers have taken issue with across most party lines here is that the money coming from the EU, from the EU budget, it's relatively small, 7.5 billion out of 1 trillion. And a lot of the money that is planned within this this master plan is not 100% sure yet. And then another issue people are taking here is that some countries, as in many EU projects, will receive less money out of this program than they pay in. For example, Germany. But that all aside, majority of political groups here decide that this is a very important deal and it has to be done, but they disagree on some of the technicalities.
All right, our correspondent Max Zander with the latest tonight on the European Union's planned Green Deal. Max, thank you.
Now, Iran's downing of that passenger airliner took place shortly after Tehran launched missile strikes at bases housing American troops in neighboring Iraq. Now, those strikes came in response to the killing of the Iranian general Qassem Soleimani by the United States. The Trump administration is facing criticism now from opposition Democrats for changing its justification for his killing. It initially said Soleimani was planning imminent attacks on Americans. Later, it said that embassies would be the target. We asked U.S. journalist Nagar Mordasavi if we're any closer to knowing the exact reasons why Soleimani was targeted.
I don't think so. As one of the senators put it, he said, we're not seeing evidence of this imminent attack because I suspect that the evidence doesn't even exist. And this is not only Democratic senators and members of Congress. Some Republicans also from Congress have been coming out against the administration, basically asking for the justification of this massive aggression. Now, the Iranians might have retaliated once in a way to not escalate this one specific episode, but the proxy war is not going to go away. But now we're hearing all of these contradictory reports and statements from the administration that don't really match the initial justification that they basically gave for this very escalatory decision.
That was Nagar Mordasavi for us earlier in Washington.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia. On his program called Going Underground, British host Afshin Ratansi interviewed Esmail Baghi Hamani, the Iranian ambassador to the United Nations. They discuss who General Soleimani was. Western media had praised him last year for being a leader in the defeat of ISIS in Syria and in Iraq. He had traveled to Iraq on a civilian aircraft because his mission was to present a peace plan to Iraq from Saudi Arabia, not a military action. The ambassador points out that the murder is not justified under international rules of engagement and that at least six other Iraqi and Iranian commanders were killed. He says the assassinations were state terrorism and that it will trigger the U.S. expulsion from the region. Russia's Sputnik Radio.
Joining me from Geneva is Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, Esmail Baghaei Hamaneh. Let's just first start with who Qasem Soleimani was, because NATO nation politicians from all around the world, even Jeremy Corbyn's shadow foreign secretary here, they've been calling him a menace. The people should not shed a tear for his murder. People are calling him a terrorist, even those who do not agree with the assassination. And even though the media not long ago was saying he was one of the greatest fighters against ISIS, Daesh, and Al-Qaeda.
I think for a start that General Qasem Soleimani was a real hero, the anti-terrorist fighter who was instrumental. He was a key figure in defeating ISIS in Syria and Iraq. People in Europe should be really aware of the sacrifices Soleimani and his friends, his colleagues in Iraq and Syria did for the sake of security and safety of Europeans, even.
Well, in fairness to NATO nation mainstream media, they were a few months back celebrating him for, indeed, the de facto saving countless lives in Britain and the United States. Tell me what you know about his last hours then, because why on earth was he traveling in a civilian Chamwings flight from Damascus to Baghdad? That doesn't seem very secure. And was he carrying perhaps documents that could have paved the way for peace between Saudi Arabia and Iran?
I think this is what has been said by Prime Minister Abdul Mahdi of Iraq. And as I told you, he was an official guest of Iraqi government. He was received by Protocol Department of Iraq in Baghdad International Airport. So he didn't need to travel to Iraq in a secret way. He used commercial aircraft. And simply because he had a message from the government of Iran through government of Iraq to other partners. It was an act of cowardice to assassinate such a brilliant person whose role has been very instrumental in defeating Daesh and Daesh in Syria and Iraq.
There are, of course, some in the West who believe NATO, lots of different vested interests, would not want peace between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
The important thing is that he was an official leader, an official commander of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and assassinating the representative of a sovereign nation in such a cowardly manner is something beyond imagination. And I think by that assassination, the United States has already surpassed the red lines distinguished from barbarism, from civilized rules of engagement. He was assassinated along with four of his Iranian colleagues, plus a number of Iraqi highly revered commanders. So that means that the Iraqi trust to Americans was betrayed, because the American forces are supposed to be protecting Iraq against Daesh and other extremist forces. But it is a sad irony that the key anti-ISIS fighters are assassinated by the same armed forces that are supposed to protect Iraqi people against extremism.
Iran's retaliation for the assassination of Soleimani was just to hit a few ballistic missiles into some empty buildings at the Al-Ain Assad air base in Iraq. Why was that considered a normal response?
Of course, this is their narrative. As our leaders said, this was a first slap in their face. And this was simply the measure we took in self-defense against the American armed attack against Iran sovereignty. I think that's the beginning of a kind of wake-up call for the people and for the governments in the region, because everyone is fed up with the American disastrous presence in our region. They have been in Iraq from 2003. They invaded the country, and they are saying that they have spent trillions of dollars just to turn the U.S. armed forces into an armed bandit to assassinate other leaders. I think that's really a disgrace. And that's why we believe that that's the beginning of the U.S. expulsion from the Middle East, from the West Asia. We have said many times, and we have proven beyond any doubt, that we are law-abiding nation. We have noble warriors. We are not assassins. And that's why we informed the government of Iraq, because at the end of the day, it was the Iraqi base which was abused by the United States to target our heroes. That's why we had to inform Iraqi government in advance to make sure that no Iraqis are injured in that attack. It was an act of state terrorism amounting to a crime of aggression, to an act of aggression. So we did what we are entitled to do under the international law.
Well, Britain was immediately implicated because B-52 jets were being used in the occupied Chagos Islands in Diego Garcia. There was refueling reports from RAF Mildenhall in Britain. And in fact, Boris Johnson sent HMS Montrose and HMS Defender to Iran's shores. There were reports here of the capability of Britain to bomb Iran. What happens if Britain does something like it did a while back and hijacked reported oil supplies for the poor of Syria, which were aided by the Iranian government?
I think everyone is familiar with that episode. It was a disgrace for those who initiated that kind of interception of our vessel, and I'm sure everyone is familiar with the outcome. But apart from that, I think, again, we have made it very clear that whoever provide bases or their territory to the U.S. forces for their malevolent attacks, for their acts of aggression against Iran, would be held accountable.
Apart from arms company shares doing well, arguably this is a very dangerous week indeed. Trump did say that apart from wanting the help of NATO now, he wasn't clear about that, he wants more sanctions on Iran. Will there be any more revenge now from Iran for the Trump assassination of Qasem Soleimani?
This is the beginning of a very, I guess, exciting episode. It was a wake-up call for the people in the region and beyond. This was an act of self-defense by Iranian armed forces against the U.S., but as I told you, I think this is the beginning of I hope not long process, that the people of our region would be get rid of the American presence in the region, because their presence in our region has brought nothing except misery, war, and hatred.
Ambassador, thank you.
That interview was from Afshin Rutansi's program called Going Underground, heard on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all of the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. In fact, of the more than 100 radio stations rebroadcasting the show this year, only one, WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, has helped to finance it. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support it like an individual listener in Willits, California, a serial supporter from Idaho, and a radio producer in Modesto, California did this week. If you use PayPal, you can create a monthly subscription to support my efforts. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Venezuelan leaders are denouncing U.S. government plans to intervene in their upcoming National Assembly elections. the Chilean government is working on a bill to regulate the right of civilians to assemble. Bolivian president in exile, Evo Morales, urged his country to restore the rule of law and control paramilitary forces who are persecuting the leaders of Evo's political party. In the first 2 weeks of 2020, 17 social leaders have been assassinated in Colombia. Finally, Radio Havana Cuba aired a statement by U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders about the disinformation that the U.S. media delivers concerning events in Latin America. Radio Havana Cuba.
Venezuela's Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza on Thursday denounced that the U.S. government is promoting a plan to intervene in the elections of the National Assembly to be held this year, 2020. During his press conference, Arreaza disclosed a diplomatic note that the U.S. government sent to several countries asking them to promote so-called free elections in Venezuela. Arreaza said they have not given up the strategy of trying to impose a presidential election in Venezuela, and he added, the U.S. aims to establish a transitional government through which Washington expects to organize supposedly fair elections. They want to have elections using their own standards, but that will never happen because the United States will never control Venezuela. The Venezuelan foreign minister also denounced that the economic support offered by the Trump administration to the Venezuelan opposition is actually intended to overthrow the constitutional president, Nicolas Maduro. Arreaza added that the United States intends to present itself as author of the dialogues between the Venezuelan government and the opposition. Chile's Minister of Justice and Human Rights, Hernán Larraín, has revealed in an interview with the newspaper El Mercurio that the government is working on a bill to regulate the right to assembly. According to Larraín, this is a complex issue and work is being done with the legal community, including the director of the Human Rights National Institute, to provide good legislation. He clarified that the right to assembly is linked to other rights and permissions, including free expression and demonstration. For this reason, the right to protest as such is not strictly regulated in the conventions. The minister also explained that the proposal will be debated in the human rights agenda for this year, since it must enter Congress during the first half of 2020. Bolivia's constitutionally elected president, Evo Morales, who is now in asylum in Argentina after the coup d'etat against him, urged the South American nation to restore the rule of law in his country in order to achieve peace, reconciliation, and unity. Morales tweeted that the treatment of government officials from his administration, including former Interior Minister Carlos Romero, by groups called Pititas or Motequeros, was unacceptable. Morales said that these groups are a paramilitary force of the de facto regime of self-proclaimed President Jeanine Áñez. Evo Morales said, peace, reconciliation, and unity in Bolivia will only be achieved by restoring the rule of law. He also urged the elimination of these groups. Since the coup d'etat was carried out on November 10th last, the de facto government, together with civilian right-wing groups, has unleashed a persecution campaign against leaders of the movement towards socialism, Evo Morales' party, social leaders, and those who have mobilized against the anti-democratic regime.
In the first 2 weeks of 2020, 17 social leaders have been assassinated in Colombia, the co-president of the Senate Peace Commission, Ivan Cepeda, has reported. Cepeda published the official figures on his Twitter account at a time when frequent violent acts have been reported almost daily in the country. He denounced the assassination of Benjamin Banguera, a signatory to the 2016 peace agreement between the Colombian state and the former Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia's People's Army, FARC-EP, rebels. One of the latest violent acts was condemned by the Catatumbo Small Farmers Association. Social leader Tulio Sandoval, who was participating in the program to replace illegal crops, was killed by armed individuals who broke into his house, dragged him out, and shot him repeatedly in front of his family. This comes 3 years after the signing of the peace agreement and 17 months since Ivan Duque took office as Colombia's president. Since the peace accord, the United Nations High Commissioner's Office for Peace in Colombia has counted 303 assassinations of human rights leaders. A total of 10,468 homicides have been officially recorded in Colombia between January and November 2019, this according to the Foundation Peace and Reconciliation.
I'm very concerned about the media today and the degree to which a few corporations control what we see, hear, and read. But if you check American history, you know, sometimes the president will tell you, well, we are always defenders of freedom. We believe in freedom. But if you check history, what you will find is that in many years, especially in Latin America, which way back from when President Monroe developed his Monroe Doctrine, we have the right to own Latin America, and we will tell any government there what we want to happen. That's the simple truth. So throughout our history, we have overthrown many, many governments. We didn't like their form of government. In the case of Chile in 1973, what you had is an election in which a guy named Salvador Allende won the election. Problem is, Nixon and his friends didn't like him. Why? Because Salvador Allende fought for the poor people and the working people of that country. He believed that the resources of Chile, their copper mines and so forth, should belong to the people. And he won a free election. No one denied that for a second. It was a tough election. Didn't win by much, but he won a free election. There was another election. His party got more support. He was overthrown by the CIA and corporate interest, because corporate interest preferred, of course, that the United States companies dominate that country. And a lot of what politics is about, going way, way back to the 19th century, through England, France, is the domination of colonies so that big companies in a given country can take the resources of those countries for their own use. So I think that's what happened, and it was a very unfortunate day in American history. Allende won in a democratic election, was popular, was overthrown, and eventually killed. And in his place, a guy named General Pinochet took place, ran that country with an iron fist, killed many, many people, but he was okay. He was a good guy. Why? Because he was a friend of corporate America.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, and sometimes their podcast links worked. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's simpler than you might think, though there's interference that comes off of electronic devices, making shortwave much more difficult. If you use the internet, listening globally is even easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link. And get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 23rd year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.